morning, everybody, and welcome to CIBC's Eastern Investor Conference. I'm Stephanie Price. I'm the telecom and one of the technology analysts here at CIBC. With me today, we've got Tony Staffieri, President and CEO of Rogers. So welcome, Tony. We'd like to make this as interactive as possible, so if anybody does have a question, please feel free to raise your hand, but let's just jump right in. In terms of where to start, I think maybe we'll start with the Shaw transaction. I think that's top of mind for investors right now. Just curious around the current divestiture agreement. So it seems to satisfy a lot of the issues the Competition Bureau had. So what is the Competition Bureau getting wrong here? What else can be done to kind of move this along?
Okay, well, first off, Stephanie, thank you for having us and good morning, everyone. In terms of the approval process, we're disappointed it's taking as long as it has in terms of getting the necessary approvals. We've put forth a remedy proposal that we believe addresses the concerns that the government has put in front of us. Our deal with Videotron is going to create a fourth wireless competitor that is going to be much stronger than Freedom is today. They're buying Freedom in its entirety, including all the spectrum. And post-close, they'll end up with an asset that, combined with Videotron's existing customers, will be about 4 million customers, and so they'll have scale. They'll cover, in terms of network, 85% of the Canadian population. They bring to the table 3,500 spectrum, and so they have a very clear path to 5G. So we think we've put forward a proposal that is going to enhance competition in the wireless market in Canada. So we'll continue to go through the process. The next step is the tribunal process, and we're looking forward to the principled and objective approach that the tribunal will bring to this file, so they could look at the facts of our and work through that.
Now, there is one other potential mediation step here. And how do you think about going into that mediation? What can you offer the Competition Bureau, or how confident are you that you can get a mediated settlement done here?
There is a step at the end of October of mediation between the parties. And as we head into that, unlike the previous mediation that happened in early July, all parties will have all the evidence, facts, analysis, expert reports available. And so it'll be a much more informed meeting for all the parties in terms of, we believe, what the facts are, and if there are issues, then what those issues are. We really don't know what to expect in terms of that mediation. We have been, continue to be, open to dialogue to address concerns and issues. And as I said, we believe we've addressed the issues and concerns that have been communicated to us. So that we go into it with an open mind. Having said that, the transaction we have is the transaction we have with Videotron, and believe that addresses all the requirements.
Has the Competition Bureau been forthcoming about any other potential remedies that they are looking for? Or how do you think about that dialogue with the Competition Bureau heading into the mediation process?
Well, as I said, the issues and concerns that the Competition Bureau has are public, and there isn't any more information that we have in terms of those issues or concerns. And so they sort of stand as they do in the public record. And as I said, we think we've addressed them with the remedy that we have with Videotron. But importantly, as we think about competition, Videotron has made it clear that they have what they need to be competitive in the markets. And given the amount of investment that they're making in this, that's a very credible position, an important position.
So that leads into my next question around Shaw Mobile. And would you look to include that as part of the divestiture agreement if necessary? And is there a way of retaining the full economics of owning those household relationships with the Shaw Mobile divestiture?
As I said at the outset, we're selling all of Freedom Wireless to Videotron. For the benefit of those not familiar with it, there's a small subset of what are called Shaw Mobile customers that were bundled with internet or internet and TV as an add-on, either as talk and text or with data usage. And they were a bundled price. And disentangling those customers is complicated and not going to be a very good customer experience for them. And importantly, Videotron, the buyer, isn't interested in acquiring those customers. And so economically, you know, as I said, the transaction we have is the transaction we have. We think it's a bit academic as to whether Shaw Mobile stays or goes, given the nature of that bundled customer and what it's going to mean for the customer, and given the size of the number of subscribers that we're talking about relative to the overall base of Freedom customers.
Okay. Maybe let's touch on bundling for a second, because the other question I think the Competition Bureau is raising is around bundling at West. And so would Rogers be willing to include some of the Shaw Fiber assets in Western Canada as part of the divestiture agreement, if necessary?
Similar to the, you know, the response to the previous question, the deal we have with Videotron is the deal that we're willing to do. And importantly, Videotron has made it clear they have what they need. The Shaw transaction for us has always been about buying the cable assets, which includes the fiber and coax network that it has. And so any notion that we would give up some of those assets really impacts the economics of the deal for us. And so it's a bit, we find it a bit academic in terms of that notion. Even when you talk about fiber assets, from where to where is important. And so given that complexity, we just don't find it practical to have any, I would say meaningful dialogue on that. More importantly, as I said, we need to keep the economics of our Shaw transaction whole, and Videotron, in the agreement we've done with them, believes they have fiber and backhaul that they need to be competitive, and they'll have access to what they need to be able to bundle as well.
Okay. And maybe touching on ISED here, can you give us an update on that process and where they are in their due diligence?
Once we go through the tribunal process and following that decision, we would then look to the minister to provide his overall decision on the transaction, which would encompass the ISED decision. And so we'll need to wait for the tribunal process to unfold before we get a decision there. But it's important to note that we are not looking to keep any of the spectrum that Freedom has today, and it's the wholesale transfer of the whole Freedom business, including the portfolio of spectrum.
Okay. When you think about the timeline here to the Shaw close, it seems like it is elongating. Can you talk a little bit about those Shaw assets? Do you think the business is deteriorating, and how does that elongated timeline and incremental financing costs impact the CapEx plans and the synergy expectations?
As we work through the timeline, as you said, it's been lengthened from our expectation. But on the other hand, we've been very thoughtful and methodical as we continue to assess each step of the way, and our investment thesis on it only continues to improve as we move along. We continue to be worried about the impact a delay has on competition, just as other stakeholders do. But with respect to the strength of the cable assets, we continue to be very bullish and confident in terms of not only the strategic value that those assets provide to Rogers, but the economic upside that they provide to us. And so when you look at the quality of that asset, they continue to invest, continue to perform in the marketplace. And that's against the backdrop of population growth that is better than we expected at the time we announced the deal a year and a half ago. Even with the increased financing, we still sit overall with financing on this transaction inside of 5%. And so we've been very methodical, disciplined, each step of the way in ensuring we have all the pins in place to make sure we have deal certainty. And we have, between us, Shaw, and Videotron, a deep commitment to see this transaction through. And so we've extended the timeline for our agreements as needed. We've extended financing to the end of next year, on terms that we think will continue to be favorable to what we would otherwise have had to pay if we had to issue financing ultimately at deal close. So we think that still works for us, and importantly, it's allowed us to harden the operational improvements that we've been making in our own business. And when you look at cable in particular, a lot of good improvements. And so we're going into the Shaw transaction from a position of much stronger processes and execution capabilities than we would have previously. And that means we have more confidence with the synergies that we outlined. We're still on target, very much confident about the $1 billion of synergies over 2 years. But as we look to capital synergies and importantly revenue synergies, we continue to see more upside than we had previously anticipated in our investment thesis when we did the deal. And so all of that hardening of the uncertainties we previously had is only improving the economics that we see.
You mentioned competition in your answer there. Can you talk a little bit about the competitive environment that you see post the Shaw transaction and where you think the biggest opportunities are? And that kind of leads back to your prior answer as well.
Yeah, in terms of, and your question probably relates more so to the wireless side of it. And, you know, within, in terms of backdrop today, Canada is one of the most competitive from a facilities-based competition. As you look around the world, we have at least four in every market. And as you look to other countries, including the U.S., you see more competition and more brands in each market. So we compete vigorously today in every single one of our markets. And post close of the Shaw transaction and the divestiture of Freedom, we expect that competitive intensity to not only continue, but probably heighten. We think we have what we need to be able to compete and bring to the table in terms of the right value proposition and get our fair share of the market. So so we think competition, as I said, will only heighten, and we'll continue to do what we do and execute in that market.
And how do you think about Quebecor as a competitor post the Freedom divestiture?
Well, they bring to the transaction very deep operational experience and a track record of being very competitive in the marketplace. We compete with them today with their brands in the Quebec market, and I think their numbers speak for themselves in terms of their performance. And so we fully expect them, as I said, particularly with the amount of capital they're putting at risk, to bring that vigor and intensity to the marketplace, and we'll be prepared for that.
Are there any questions from the audience at this point? Sure.
If it goes to a competition tribunal, decisions rendered, either Rogers or the competition bureau appeal the decision to the Federal Court of Appeals, how long is that process?
Once we conclude the tribunal hearing, so it's scheduled for November 7th, a month has been set aside, and you saw that in publicly in terms of the timeline for the hearing. Given our remedy proposal that we've put forward, our expectation is the tribunal hearing will be a matter of weeks. It's difficult to predict, but that would be our expectation given the remedy we've put forward. Once a decision is rendered, either party has the ability to appeal, and depending on the nature of the appeal, it's a question as to whether or not the appeal will be heard. And if it is heard, then that would add several months to the process. And so we're into the first half of next year in terms of looking at a final decision on it. And once it's appealed to the Federal Court of Appeal, there is the opportunity to appeal to the Supreme Court beyond that. So the appeal process would certainly add months, depending on, as I said, the nature of the appeal.
So, any other questions? Yep.
Tony, the Canadian consumers under fair market
As we look to both the wireless and cable, the short answer is we aren't seeing signs of that type of pressure. It's against a backdrop of a market that continues to grow beyond our expectations, whether it's new to Canada or foreign students or just better increased penetration. All of those are contributing to a very healthy backdrop in terms of size of market. As we look within, we aren't seeing signs of either increased churn or downgrading. In fact, what we are seeing and what we've actually been focused on is upgrading. So as consumers and businesses start to move outside of the home, data usage on mobile is growing again. During COVID, it was 10 to 20% growth, whereas now we're back to 40 to 50% growth in terms of data usage. On 5G, average users would be sitting at 8 to 10 gigs per month. And so the value of higher plans, and in particular the unlimited plans on the Rogers brand, is even more compelling. And so what we're seeing is a very good migration to the higher tiered plans.
With that, maybe we'll switch over to the base business here from Shaw. Another question I had is, Rogers has obviously got market-leading EBITDA growth here, and just curious if you can talk a little bit about puts and takes and how much is that consumer experience that you were talking about and how much is, you know, maybe some early synergies from Shaw.
As we work through the execution improvements that we've been talking about consistently over the last many months, what you're seeing come through is an improvement in market share in both our wireless and cable business that continues to work its way through even today, and we can come back to that. And then translating that to healthy flow through and healthy margin improvements as we look to cost efficiencies. And so that's coming in nicely. You see that in our industry leading margins in both wireless and cable. And we continue to see opportunities for cost efficiencies with or without Shaw. And certainly Shaw will, and I've talked about the $1 billion of synergies there, but we're on a quest to have leading returns in each of those businesses that will translate ideally to leading industry ROIs. So that's the focus there, but it really stems from the market share in each of those and working that way through. The efficiencies come from things you would expect in each of our different areas, but if I had to summarize it overall, it really has been about a focus on sales execution and customer experience, while at the same time hardening many of the fundamentals in our network. We've always believed we had the best assets, and it was really a matter of monetizing those assets, and that's what you're starting to see come through.
It's interesting because it's being done in a period of rising inflation. So maybe you can touch on inflation and some of the levers you're pulling there to offset.
In terms of our input costs, we haven't seen strong indications of inflation. On the supply side, with respect to equipment, for example, we've gotten better at planning and forecasting, and so we have much better lead times. And so as we look to other industries with supply constraints, we really haven't had that. And so we've largely had the equipment we need. If there was any delay in the infrastructure build process, it's been through getting permitting. That's slowed down, and that's true of the development industry as well. And so we'll work our way through that. But as I said, with population growth, we're seeing homes passed in cable improving nicely to trending more like 3% year on year and rising and even as high as 3.5% in some months. So that's coming along nicely. As we look to handsets, supply continues to be adequate for the demand we have and really hasn't been an issue. If there were areas of cost where we do see some rising costs, it would be on what we describe as front line. So our team members who work in our stores, answer phones, our frontline technicians that do installation and repairs out there, we're seeing that labor market continuing to be tightened, and we're doing the right things there, but we're managing that increased cost within our overall cost structure and making the right cost allocations to offset that, so that we can continue to drive on the margin initiative.
Maybe let's switch over to the July outage. Just curious if there's been a lingering impact, what you've seen in terms of customer churn and promotional activity as you head into back to school.
We're extremely pleased with the customer loyalty and resiliency, frankly, that we're seeing in the marketplace. It did have an impact in terms of our subscriber. We talked about the credits, the $150 million credit that you'll see flow through in our financial results for the third quarter. But importantly, as we look to our performance in the markets post-outage, we're at levels that we were previously at. And so you'll see in our results a one-time impact in terms of subscriber, but we've moved beyond that. And we're pleased with our performance in the market and the market share trend that we're on. We're largely on the trend that we had pre-outage. And you saw that come through in our Q1 and in particular our Q2 results. And so that continues to move nicely. In terms of wireless share, that's working its way through well, and you'll see that in the results. And on the cable side, we've also rebounded. There's just lower volume in cable, so when you look at net numbers for a quarter, the one-time impact on subscribers will look like it has more of an impact on cable, but it was about the same in cable and wireless. And as I said, it was isolated, and we've moved on from it.
Oh, and this is a question at the back, yeah?
With separation of the networks, the wireline and wireless, are there any changes to sales approach or any positive knock-on effects that aren't immediately obvious?
As we work through separating our core IP network, which has been an industry standard for well over a decade and probably into two decades in terms of and it's been a standard around the world. And so almost every operator would have a common core IP network. As we work to separate those and work with our vendors on that, the way we're thinking about it is going to be industry leading. And we'll certainly be a first for Canada in terms of the way we do it or planning on doing it. And so that resiliency of separating them is going to be important. And you touch on something important in the way we go to market and are able to offer backup through CPE and our network on either one of those platforms is going to be an important value proposition out there. And so it's caused us to rethink, especially in this world of working from home. We've always thought of consumer and enterprise, and there's this gray market in between of individuals working from home looking for business-grade connectivity and business-grade backup. And so we are actively looking at on how we capitalize and serve that need that's in the marketplace today. So that's one thing that has really helped in our thinking. And of course, as we go through it, what we're finding is there are probably, it's caused us to go back and look at very detailed processes we have in each of our networks leading up to what is today the core IP. And that's allowed us to look at efficiency improvements as well in terms of steps that we can either take out while at the same time improving the review and approval processes for upgrade changes.
On the network topic, maybe you could talk a little bit about your views on DOCSIS 4 versus fiber and how you're thinking about network upgrades at this point.
Yeah, the debate of DOCSIS 4 and fiber for us, we find somewhat academic. We've been putting fiber in the ground and throughout our network for well over a decade. And so when you look at the Rogers network, it's a combination of deep fiber that can go all the way to the home, and in many instances goes all the way to the home. And in other instances, we will have fiber partway and rely on coax. And so we're taking a very pragmatic approach. And where we have fiber, we will use passive optical to serve that customer. And in some markets, you will have seen that we launched 8 gig symmetrical, fastest 60 watt Fi technology. And we'll capitalize on that. In instances where we have coax, the DOCSIS 4 roadmap is well on its way to 10G, and you've seen some announcement come out of the U.S. over this past week. And so we have that alternative that is extremely cost effective. So we don't have an investment cliff that we need to worry about. We'll continue to make the investments we need in order to serve that market. Importantly, all those capabilities, whether it's 8 gigs or frankly even 2.5 gigs in some markets, is well beyond where mainstream consumer demand is. Our average customer would sit at about 300 megs of speed today. And so these, you know, what I would describe as ultra high speeds and symmetrical upload and download are beyond where the market's at, and we're confident that we'll continue to see evolution in technology that will stay in front of the consumer. And so we'll do all those things that help from a marketing and branding standpoint. But the important thing is the consumer really sees value in having enough speed for what they have and reliability. And, you know, it comes back to the things we're doing on our network to improve resiliency and reliability. And that's really now become a primary focus for us, particularly with respect to in-home Wi-Fi. That's really where the consumer is focused, and the battleground, we believe, is playing out, as opposed to top-end speeds.
That makes sense. We have time for one last question. Is there one from the audience? All right. Maybe I'll ask one on wireless. You've mentioned several times the strong wireless consumer out there. Can you break that strength down for us between roaming and immigration, retail reopenings, and migration to kind of these unlimited and higher value plans? And if you strip away the impact from roaming, you know, what's happening to ARPU?
Yeah, good question to close on. Certainly, all of the above are helping the growth within wireless, and we're pleased to see that. On the roaming side, we've had good bounce back. On the consumer side of roaming, we've talked and you've heard previously, we're at 130%, still running at about 130% of pre-pandemic levels on roaming, and it's all being driven by consumer. Business is still a small portion of what it used to be, and so there's still opportunity for business roaming, and to some extent that may offset with some of the consumer travel. But it continues to be healthy upside. Beneath that, we always look to the underlying ARPU as well. I've talked about the volume side of it and what's contributing to that in terms of new to Canada, better penetration, foreign students returning to attend classes in Canada. And a few other things in terms of regional plays that are helping on the volume side. And then on the ARPU side, it's really been about a focus we have on moving to the Rogers brand. And in both cable and wireless, you will see us being much more strategic about how we think about the flanker and the value proposition, and be very specific on that and move and make it very clear to consumers and businesses the value proposition of the Rogers brand. And as a result of that, we're seeing a very nice migration to the unlimited plans, and I've talked about the value proposition there being more compelling. And so that migration is allowing us to see very good underlying ARPU improvements in addition to the volume. So it's those two fundamentals that are moving in the right direction for us.
Great. Well, unfortunately, we're out of time. Thank you, Tony, so much for making the time this morning.
Thank you. I appreciate the question.